Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Hey guys, we wanted to take a quick minute to tell you about our recent partnership with the Amazing Bones Coffee Company.
Let's face it, you're probably sick and tired of drinking that old plain Jane coffee brand every morning. Well, fret not, dear listener. Bones Coffee is here to kick your taste buds into high gear.
Bones Coffee has a wide variety of flavors to choose from, including maple bacon, peaches and spring, island grog, and my personal favorite, chocolate raspberry.
Once you become hooked on the coffee, you'll be excited to learn that they have plenty of merch options to choose from as well. T-shirts, mugs, tote bags, the list goes on.
You can buy their coffee in whole bean, ground, and even evil single serve options.
Guys, we wouldn't lie to you. This coffee is great, and we know that you're going to love it too, which is why we have partnered up with Bones Coffee, and now our listeners have an exclusive discount code.
Make sure to use the code MUSICSPEAKS at checkout for 10% off your order.
That's right, James. Go to bonescoffee.com to kickstart your new coffee addiction and use the code MUSICSPEAKS for 10% off today. If you're anything like me, free time is limited. So things like yard work are just not doable. And if you're also like me, you don't even own a lawnmower. That is why All Above Landscaping is the right choice. All Above includes a variety of options when it comes to your landscaping needs, including lawn installation, design, irrigation, debris removal, maintenance, and much more. If you're in the city of Sumter and you're looking for reliable service at a friendly price, give All Above Landscaping a call today. It's 803-464-7414. Mention that you heard this ad on this podcast and you'll get a special discount on your first service. Again, that's 803-464-7414. Call All Above Landscaping today. Like so many of you, we battle depression through life's ups and downs.
Music has always been the one thing we could rely on to get us through the tough times we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music, share our stories through songs and lyrics,
interview musicians and other artists,
break down genres,
deep dive into band biographies,
and much, much more.
This is the Woodward Fail
Music Speaks Podcast
with Blake Mosley,
James Todd,
and Amanda Dolan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Woodward Show Music Speaks Podcast with your handicapped host, James Cox. I am here with a great, great, great friend now, I guess. We're friends now. We're best buds. His name is Bill Mullen, but let me tell you about him first. Bill Mullen is a talented musician and a creative mind behind a popular musical podcast that delves into the intricate world of music creation and appreciation. With a rich background in songwriting and performance, Bill explores various genres and themes, engaging listeners with insightful interviews and compelling narratives about the industry. He has a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. His podcast not only showcases his passion for music, like I said in the musical podcast, but also highlights stories of inspiration and fellow artists. Making it a vibrant platform for both music lovers and aspiring musicians alike. Through his work, Bill fosters a deeper understanding of the artistic process and the transformative power of music. Bill, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, hey. Well, you have a musical podcast and I have a podcast musical.
Yes.
So we compliment each other in
which
some
I'm
ways.
So excited to talk to you about, because I've never heard of this before, which I'm so excited to talk to you about. Okay, so first of all, we're going to do this. What is your favorite? Okay, so you are like a lover of all genres, correct? Like me.
In fact, within my musical, I'm cross-genre as I can get. Mostly
okay.
All formed into orchestral work. About, I would guess, half of it actually is full orchestra, string and wind orchestra. I didn't get into any brass.
Right.
But yeah, there's times when there's hints of jazz and hints of electronica. I have a fondness for taking music places, you know, that probably stems from a background of classic rock. Progressive rockers, they used to be called, who, you know, there again, whether it was Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, or the Moody Blues, or other groups, even on through to Metallica, even had an orchestral piece of work. So as I heard those fusions of different styles of music, it's kind of just got into the fabric of me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We were discussing before we got on that we were talking about Tina Turner and CCR. My dad grew up with my dad's music, CCR and everything. My mom grew me up on Elvis. What genre or what artist stood out to you the most growing up? You know, because you get like your musical likes and dislikes from your parents, of course, because, you know, they're your first people that you hang out with, you know, during life.
Yeah, I'm of your parents' generation. So
The
coolest thing was that I got exposed to the full range of what was just prior to the rock and roll era, where my parents, you know, it was big band and it was the standards of America. And then I witnessed 1964, and that is the arrival of the British invasion. So the Beatles were a phenomenon. And I tracked the Beatles and I really became fascinated by the changes they went through. And as I came to learn, you know, it had a lot to do with George Martin. It had a lot to do with his not only just prodding in production values, but his engineering prowess, as well as his cross-genre, because he had been doing everything from comedy albums to classic music. And so, you know, they got introduced to Small Quartet for Eleanor Rigby. They got introduced to the big and the bombastic of Magical Mystery Tour and Sgt. Pepper. And so, again, a lot of experimentation during the 60s in a lot of different ways.
Right. But
certainly, you know, seeing a Sly and the Family Stone, I got to play originally, of course, three chord progression, rock and roll, garage band stuff, meaning Gloria and Hang On Sloopy.
Yes. Good
and film. Yeah, all that simple, but kind of just fun, love and music. But that morphed into, because I lived in Southern Indiana near the river, Ohio River, and that morphed into an influence from Memphis and Memphis soul. So, yeah, Motown was out there, loved Motown, but Memphis soul, you know, really was something that there again you could play. A lot of bands could just progress from, you know, the Louie Louie songs on into Hold On, I'm Coming and some other things. And so I got to play through that. I got to play in a three-piece power trio, doing everything from Hendrix to Cream to Grand Funk Railroad.
You had Mark Foreigner on recently. Yeah, we just talked about.
So and then on into Southern rock.
Yeah.
And I was in a band that we went the furthest with that band in the 70s. And we had a deal with a Indianapolis studio, and the studio shopped it, and we ended up having a label deal. And we were no hit wonders. We didn't go anywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was good for me because I really wanted to be in the studio. The studio is what fascinated me.
Right.
In terms of, you know, if you think about that era, is when we went from documenting live music recordings into the studio itself becoming an instrument. And therefore, you ended up with guys like Alan Parsons, who, of course, was at the board behind Dark Side of the Moon.
Right. Yes.
And with experimental musicians, the studio engineers slash producers of the time really could take the sonic landscape new places. And so that, like I was saying, that was a major influence.
Yeah.
And eventually I got into commercial production, making music for advertising and or for in what was called corporate music for training and all kinds of, you know, new car rollout presentations and all kinds of things like that. But that also led me into program music and creating for television and film movies. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And that got me into the whole licensing side of the business too.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like any career musician, you have to do a lot of different things to juggle and keep going.
Yeah, especially when you have a music podcast like me, because I have to do this and that. Yeah, but you've been everywhere, you know, since 70s, you said, to now. Do you feel like music is going like the total opposite of what it was back then? Because yes, there are some amazing songs, but you have songs now that doesn't mean anything to anybody. You know, as opposed to back then, music back then was built on storytelling, because you had Johnny Cash and William Jennings. Those were real stories, you know. Now it's just not that. Do you feel like it's going in a better, it's going forward? Or do you feel like it's just not doing anything for the industry?
Well, there's a whole lot in that question.
Yeah.
In some respects, like you just mentioned, somebody like Johnny Cash or the singer-songwriter eras, where you truly heard a slice of life in the music, I try to instill some of that within what I did, in part because it was taking an account of my life. I didn't know it at first, other than I just started to look at things retrospectively and start to connect the dots. And so my podcast is called As I Recall Forever.
Yes.
I didn't know that was going to be the name when I started. I just started writing some music. I started to call old friends. I started to collaborate. And one thing led to another in terms of what was revealed to me. And so I could only see if far ahead as the next couple steps. I was looking for, you know, where were why were certain moments meaningful to me, and why I felt so attached to them, like they're indelibly etched in me, that I hold them forever as moments that impacted me, people who influenced me, surroundings that I was in.
So this whole thing is based on what you lived through.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a memoir.
Yeah, right.
Of sorts. But yes, it's my life, but I'm a very good bad example. So you okay. can learn something from this. And it's also meant to encourage others. It's meant to take a look at your own life and to take account so that you can go forward. You know, a fact that listeners may recognize is that our life experiences shape us into who we are. and they bring us forward to this place in our lives. Yet we don't take it into account. Oftentimes we're just living day by day.
Yeah.
You know, getting through the day is enough. And in the meantime, as in my story, there were times I was putting painful things aside. I didn't want to deal with it. I was sweeping it under the rug. And sometimes, you know, those memories are tinged with a little bit of loss. Sometimes you realize you're going through emotions, you know, and I've been there. So I realized that some of this stuff I just needed to get out and document in some way. But another fact is, deep down, we know that acknowledging what we've been through is a chance to see the big picture and to take a look at your life's journey and put those into perspective, allowing us to see the meaning and purpose that is in our life. And so how do we gain an understanding of our purpose and allow ourselves to see that grand design? Well, that's a little bit of what I wanted to prompt for people. Not to say, hey, look at me. No, yeah. It's more of, in many respects, for me, it was where God was at work.
Mm.
You know, those forever moments. We have forever deep in our human psyche. Well, why is that? You know, why do we always say always, forever, you know, timeless, all these terms that we use? Well, it's because we do have an inkling of what that is about. And so these were my forever moments that I realized. And once you start to look at forever, then you start to get the bigger picture of seeing God at work in your life.
Yeah.
So it's a faith quest on top of it. And looking at how I narrowly escaped various what could be ruinous times in my
right.
life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Party
and
times.
I think we all have them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's all part of perhaps youthful rebellion and, right. and what have you. So, I wanted to make this a journey also musically, in terms of I called up an old friend who had been introduced to me, who was from Southern California, and I licensed his music into media as I was doing. And we both had a fondness for orchestration for soundtracks. And so he went to USC and studied film music. And I had studied commercial music to some degree, mostly on the job,
right?
as I got opportunities. And so I just had one ballad. It started with one song that I was co-writing with a guy who was in that band from way back when. He saw some of the stuff I was working on online and said, hey, I've got some things we ought to work together. And so a guy named Rick Flauding was the orchestrator. And I said, I got a song that could use some strings. And he did such a beautiful job that we were both knocked out. And he said, you know, we've got to do more. It's like, yeah. Okay, I wasn't thinking of this actually being orchestrated. But,
right.
So that was the beauty of it. It really evolved. And at one point early in the sessions, I realized this wasn't a solo project anymore, that I wanted to make it something, because it had taken on a life of its own. And I wanted to give it a name. I wanted to put this troupe of people together to figure out. So I was influenced in that respect many years ago in Chicago while we were doing some session work, me and a partner who had this media music company. And at times we would need horn players and string players and what have you. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy named Arnie Roth who we would hire as the contractor, and he would bring those folks together. And often it was some symphony folks, a combination of other folks. But at any rate, that section ended up primarily being the section that a guy named Chip Davis used for a group called Mannheim Steamroller.
Yes.
So okay. A lot of people don't know that name today. But it became a kind of an underground hit. It swelled up from, they're largely known for their Christmas music. But at any, but they were very known for integrating synthesizers into an orchestrated sound. And that was kind of cool at the time. So here I got exposed directly to what that group was doing. And I kind of flashed back that to go, oh, yeah, I need to give this a name, something like that. And I came up with the name The Next Humanity. And The Next Humanity kind of, you might ask, well, what's the next humanity? And that's a good question. What is going to be the next humanity?
Right.
Because we're facing a lot of strange times, interesting times where, you know, you have the digital onslaught, things like AI and just the constant barrage of information coming at us. You have biotechnologies and robotics and AI and all of the things that are kind of, in some ways, folks see it as threatening, in other ways, challenging
I was going to say least. I was going to say AI and all this new stuff is going to be a scary time, you know?
Yeah.
But who knows, you know? I mean, it might, you know, it might be the real life Terminator. We don't know yet, you know? And I was kind of taking that war. Yeah, but
Yeah. So that was part of it. A part of it was taking that synergy that was coming out of all these people that we were working with and trying to capsulize it into something. And I will say, if I have encouragement, I think that's what artists need to do, and that we don't have the same formats that we had back when the high concept bands were around. In other words, guys that did concept albums.
Yes.
Yep. And so I think the challenge today, to answer your question, is to give your music context. You know, it has to be in the, you know, doing video, music videos are a way to give your music context.
Right.
And so when I got all of this work done, so 3 years into it, I've got all the tracking and I'm doing most of the vocal because I did the scratch tracks here at home and I realized I really want to get other singers on this.
Yeah.
So there's a variety of just the vocal palette. And so that was another shift. And I called somebody who knew someone I knew because we kind of ran in the same circles for a time, but we never worked together. And his name is Tim Davis. And Tim was the director of the show Glee, but he's also produced for Lady Gaga and others. So he's a heavy hitter. So I called somebody who knew him and I said, hey, I want to play a song, get a song to you. What do you think if Tim would be interested in singing on this tune? And sure enough, he was so gracious to get back in touch with me to say, hey, man, this stuff sounds masterful. I'd be happy to. But on the other hand, how about you let me, if you're going to have other singers on this, why don't you let me cast and direct those performances? And I said, are you kidding? I'm all in.
Right.
So you see what I'm saying? It kept taking on more, you know, it's like the Lord was saying.
More of a final shape, yeah.
Yeah, you're not done yet.
Yeah.
And so I have all of this music, and suddenly, you know, it's like over an hour and 20 minutes worth of music. And it's like, well, who sits down and listens to that context of structure of music? And it had an arc to it. You know, my wife, as I was writing it, I'd bring her a song and she'd say, man, what's that about? And I'd start to give her some of the backstory of where I got inspired or where I drew from on in my life. And she said, you got to write an essay, write that stuff down. That's just as interesting as the songs. And so once we got the vocal tracking done, I realized, yeah, maybe I should take a cue from my wife. And suddenly my dilemma, the producer's dilemma of how do people don't listen in this short attention span theater that we have out there where it's become, you know, the 3 minute, now it's the 2.5 minute song. And pretty soon it's the 1 minute and 22 second song on social media, and you know what I mean, that it's all of these incredibly bite-sized. So I'm answering your question in a long way as far as my view right. on, and just where I came from.
Right.
And I realized, well, okay, people don't have those listening habits of putting on music and kicking back and putting their feet up. Some people do. I mean, there's
some people, yes.
Yeah. You know, there's vinyl record collectors and that kind of crowd.
Yeah, I got a lot of vinyl record collectors, you know, you see back there. Yeah, but I was going to ask you, yeah, you're right, because a lot of people now, a lot of bands now are going to singles instead of full albums because they realize that nobody sits down and listens to their album front to back like they used to anymore. You know,
more power to them. And yeah. Again, I think from some of the sonic production values are incredible today.
Yes.
You know, the pop music and or dance, electronic dance. I've always loved synthesizers. So, you know, there's a high gloss level of production value these days. And some of the songwriting, you know, is right up there.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I personally feel the human touch is a little out of some of that. And there's a couple of our songs where we didn't do it to click, because we just wanted to actually allow the tempo to float and to have a pull and then a release and you know, just do some things that the whole group could breathe together on, and you could get a sense for that real people playing. Yeah. And I do that. My favorite song in terms of fusion was one of the last songs, called Everything Is Spiritual. And I use a lot of synth arpeggiations, syncopations of the arpeggiations, and orchestration. And it's an interesting weaving of those two, you know, not typically found other than sometimes in soundtrack work.
Right.
So yeah, I had a blast and made it into episodes.
Right. Yeah.
Because people do sit down and they'll binge watch, or they'll take into Netflix or Apple TV or any of those formats. They will get into an episodic habit. So I thought, well, let's try this, because this hasn't, I've never heard of it being done, but maybe it'll give people some inspiration to try to forge the music into conceptual works, put it out into that bite size level for people.
Yeah, I think that, okay, so what we're talking about, everybody, is it is on a podcast. It's not on like he does have CD to get by, but this is the first time I ever heard of a musical podcast before. And you're right, a lot of people are now tuning into podcasting and listening into the whole thing front and back, you know, as opposed to albums, you know. So, I think you've really hit a nail on head, you know, because a lot of people don't like watching musicals, you know, they think it's hokey and stuff. But if you're listening to a musical, it's like, yes, I can get into it, you know, because it's not all hokey.
Yeah, they do think of it as high school musical, or fact, Glee, for that matter.
Glee,
you know,
Glee,
I don't want to paint my friend into a corner in terms of his work from Glee, because he does a fantastic range of things.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's actually even acting in some movies. But my whole point was to say, it's not that style. It's a musical in terms of, there are serious Broadway musicals and there's other things. It's not all of that happy, happy, joy kind of veneer,
right?
Which, more power, you know, I'm not against any kind of music if people enjoy it, if it's their thing. I think it was a matter of, in the end, I did not write dialogue or anything, so it's more storytelling with music.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think people could get, I think music people could get very inventive in those formats. And you think about bands like Rush, and what they did in terms of creating almost fantasy level of entertainment. I think modern musicians have a very big challenge. Music has been commoditized to a great degree, and the tech industry itself too has brought the opportunity for revenue down to in some ways meager levels. So the industry has that challenge of finding ways to add value to what you're offering.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the band, your band, the Next Humanity, brought all these visions of music to life. Were you correct? Is it the Next Humanity band? Okay.
Yeah, that was the fun part, seeing it come to life and seeing it grow from one thing to the next. I had gone through several stages. One was the guy I started with orchestration wise, he had a massive heart attack, got a call from his wife, and I just broke into sobbing. I'd never had that kind of dam break in my life, you know, from my grandparents to my parents, you know, we saw it coming and you're kind of prepared in some respects, but to have somebody, you know, and you're working with, who, when we got back together, it was like, you know, dormitory roommates, the way we would stay up talking about all our love for Jeff Beck or who, you know, we're just all kinds of, we'd have all these wild tangent conversations. And to have that phone call from his wife to say he'd suddenly died the day before was pretty devastating. And I was just kind of, you know how you have that observer self, you know, that state of stepping back almost out of body, but your mind is looking at yourself and you're responding. It's like, what is going on? Get it together, Mullen. This woman, it's bad enough, but I can't even talk. And then I realized, no, it's exactly what she needed. You know, she needed to see how much of a brother he was to me.
Right.
And how much I suffered from that loss. But I can tell you the next day, I woke up with this sense of joy. It was like a weight had been lifted from me after that grief.
Yeah.
And I felt so strange. Like, do I have a right to feel this good about him now? And it was like, come on, I have to, you know, I have to know where he's gone. And sure enough, I started writing a song called Broken Hearted Rejoicing, which in and of itself sounds like a oxymoron. There's the word I want.
Yeah.
They don't go together.
No.
But that's life. And I thought, man, I've come up with something that describes how bittersweet it can be, how much we have to go through storms, go through the fire. But the fire kind of, you know, makes us stronger.
Agreed.
So I had a great number, and that wasn't a great experience, but I had impactful number of experiences in that whole dynamic of, that led me to four other orchestrators. One of them, who was, you know, my engineer, Kent Hooper, he's right up there. So I'm blessed to be working with a guy who, you know, he's doing Brandon Lake now, and he's done CCE Winan, and he's done a whole range of Amy Grant to Michael W. Smith. And so, in comes Carl Marsh, to conduct, and Carl comes into the control room and we say, hey, and he goes out to get prepared. And Kent turns to me and goes, you've got Carl on this project too?
Oh my God, right.
Like, with Brown. Yeah. Back in the, you know, 15 years ago, he owned this town with Brown Bannister and that whole crew. And I just happened to catch Carl at a time, and he didn't know me. I just contacted him, and I said, hey, I've got this thing, and I was very influenced by some of your work. And I said, specifically a song. And he said, well, send it over. And I sent it over, and he says, I like it. And we were still kind of coming out of the pandemic, and Nashville was just starting to fire up. And so he had opening, and he did a wonderful rendition of what I'd sent, which was just a piano vocal. So my point being is that that led me, you know, other people were kind of coming to the rescue because of my loss of Rick. And so one orchestral guy said, hey, there's this guy over in England. You might want to meet Robin Smith, Robin A. Smith, he goes by. And Robin did a lot of work for Tony Visconti, who'd done David Bowie on through to a whole group of stuff. So he even has worked on Michael Oldfield, who did the original Tubular Bells, which was the... what was the name of the movie? The Exorcist. Hello.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was the soundtrack for the original Exorcist. Oh, yeah. And so I get connected with him, and I share a couple things that I'm doing, and he took interest. So my whole point is, you know, another door opened, and I ended up with a whole set of folks that were additional collaborators through this process. And I think that's an important part of what goes on today. I know that collaboration happens almost by way of some of the labels and management companies wanting to see the very best product produced.
Right.
So exactly. That the more people you have involved, you know, the more synergy, the more energy, the greater than the sum of the parts phenomenon happens. And so, yeah, I got to experience some of that.
Nice.
And now it's a matter of, you know, seeing where it goes. You know, it's kind of like putting a kid into the world after going, you know, sending them off to college.
You
know, okay, kid, go do something. Yeah.
And I hear a very good thing, and I want to tell you, one of my favorite songs from your podcast musical is Moomin Day, you know, but that sounds very personal for you. It's like a deeply personal journey for you, right? Moomin Day.
Yeah, thank you. It's almost too melancholy in some respects. Yeah. I kind of go, I don't know, this couldn't be a hit because, you know, it's a little too much of that. But most definitely, Moving Day is a little bit about upward mobility in our lives. I mean, you wouldn't hear it necessarily, so I'll give you that backstory.
Yeah.
You know, we in modern, I would say over the course of my lifetime, we've seen a lot of movement. People having to accept a job, and it happens to be across the country, and they uproot and they move versus, you know, there was a time, and I would say during your parents' generation, where pretty much the neighborhood became your frame of reference, and you often lived there or around those parts.
Yeah.
So yeah, Moving Day has a little bit of that in it, but it really also happens to be a Pat Metheny song. So he gave me permission for adaptation, you know, just sent a demo. And Pat happens to, I'm in Kansas City now. I moved here 5-6 years ago, and he happens to be from here. I've met people, and one of his friends got me backstage when Pat was in town. So my music is very influenced by him. Over the time that he forged a lot of genre breaking, like, is he a jazz guy? Okay. Oh, is he orchestral? Is he, is he intimate, you know, acoustic guitar? Or is he prairie Americana? Is he, right. You know, there's a lot of things that Pat embodies, and it's strange because I got led to a guy by the name of Pat Coyle, and I knew of Pat's music in 90s into the 2000s, and he had some Sheffield Labs, which used to be a vinyl record production company that had high audiophile level recordings, and Pat had a couple things out, and they were produced by Lyle Mays, which is Pat's cohort as a keyboardist. And so through somebody, you know, introduced me to Pat, Pat Coyle, that is. And I go, man, would you help me out? Because I really want, my piano is at best a composer's piano rendition. And so he really helped me out by leaps. And so we have a jazz influence, and it just gave it more texture. Mm-hmm. And so Moving Day, it's one of my favorites too.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of getting, it's really that moment when you're all packed up. If anybody listening has moved, I think you'll know this moment. And you're waiting for the moving van to come.
Yes.
And it's a moment of reflection. It's a moment I even speak to how the walls ring, you know, with the carpet pulled up and the paintings pulled down. And, you know, you're just there kind of caught in between. My one line says, in between the living room and new dreams.
Yeah.
I have a lot of imagery around this as well, that I got help from several artists, because I wanted it to have accompanying depictions.
Yeah.
And so everything, they're pretty much thumbnails in as far as the songs and such, but I also created a kind of a liner notes on steroid. I have multi-page piece.
Right. Yeah.
That, so I went nuts.
Yeah.
and I have to say that, you know, I think I wish this for every artist, and that is, yeah, you're out to write the best you can, and you're trying to capture meaningful stuff, hopefully. And, you know, memorable, you know, you're trying to make it memorable, but keep in mind that when all is said and done and released, I realized it was who I was going to become in the process that could be the most important thing.
Right.
You know, and I think that's true of the artist quest in general.
Well, I resonate with Moving Day because my dad is a retired colonel now.
Oh, yeah. So
4 to 6 years. But you're right. I mean, it is a moment of fear and excitement at the same time. Fear, like I'm leaving all my friends. Excitement, what's next for me to enjoy, you know? Because we lived in the Philippines and Florida and Virginia. It's all I remember. So, yeah, Moving Day really brought back some memories, good memories that I had.
Yeah, I hope it was poignant. And
oh, yeah.
I could tell that, you know, you had to adjust. You almost have to adapt. You know, your adaptability, I think, starts to give you a strength,
right?
Of being willing to move on. I wrote another song influenced by my childhood friend that I moved away from. He moved first out of the neighborhood in Philadelphia area, and man, I sorely missed when he left, but. Back then, when people moved away, we didn't, you know, just calling across different area codes was long distance charges that added up,
yeah.
You know. So as kids, you don't do that kind of stuff.
Right.
But the interesting thing is that I was reflecting on what his boyhood friendship meant, and it was a matter of acceptance. We both had speech impediments.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I was called Biddy Mullen, And his mom even would kind of join in.
Yeah.
And it would be fun, you know, even though we both had these situations. And the whole point is that what it taught me was what you probably experienced in your moves. And that is you had a friend, but the friend is still in your heart.
Yeah.
And so the next place you go, you're able to spot a friend sooner. You
know what I mean? Yes.
And it's almost like you're not replacing. It's like you're adding layers.
More, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A friendship. Yeah.
Yeah. So, me and my sister had to be really resilient about moving away, because you meet friends and then 2 or 4 years later, we got to move again, you know? So it's like, this is going to be crap, because you know, we got a new friend, got a new everything, you know, because each state we moved in was totally different from the state we've been before, you know? I mean, going to the Philippines was a whole other world over there, you know, as opposed to, you know, United States. Yeah, so we had to be really tough and resilient, and I think my dad and mom could see that we had it in us, you know.
Yeah, it's strength building. That's
right.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So besides the song Moomin' Day, you know, that was deeply personal to you. Is there any other song within the as I recall, Forever album that resonates with you most in your life journey? You know, what?
Yes. Really, yes. Okay. And let me say this. So as I got these things put together and I kind of saw an arc to it, you know, I could put together some dramatic curve, some sense of beginning, middle, end. That was again, rewarding for me. And like I said, I wasn't sure, you know, how this was going to end up. There were times when I'm saying, hey, God, you know, when are you going to be ready to help me here? And the answer always was, well, when you're ready.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So I get through and I realized, okay, I also want to put a narrative to it. So I took the essays and I started to hammer a narrative to it. And then once I got the narrative to it, I'm getting ready to release it. And I realized again, through something a friend of mine said, he said something like, man, what you've got here, you know, you could do like a conference and you could help people with all these different, sometimes there's issues and sometimes there's just life lessons and what have you. And I sat back and I said, well, what is he talking about? And he's talking about what resonated with you with Moving Day, for instance, that it brought back a memory, but it also brought back how that memory shaped you and how you became, you know, what you are today, kind of a warrior.
Yeah.
And so I realized all my songs had some level of hope in them. And I realized that some of them were lessons. And I'm being brutally honest. If you're going to do this, you have to learn how to take truth serum and question, was that a convenient memory? Or is that really the way it was? I went and would call my sister on some things. Yeah. And so, it's a good way to shake out. You know, am I being honest with myself?
Right.
But in the end, I realized I had these outcomes in mind. In other words, that, you know, it could come with a warning label that, you know, with taking in, as I recall, Forever, you'll be entertained, but we hope there is more to it than escape from the noise of the day or whatever, that you may find an escape, not from, but to a new perspective on your life. So some of these tunes, in fact, all of them now have a bit of something that we hope, you know, even if it's just the first, as I recall, Forever, being able to recall your own forever moments, being ready to assemble flashbacks into more deliberate details of what your makeup is all about. And then, so I've harped on that long enough. But getting an understanding of tragedy and trauma, you know, there was one particular set of songs, a little suite within this, and it has to do with, I was in an auto accident, and it was a fatality, and a woman died. And so that threw me into despair.
Right.
And it led me to bankruptcy. You know, I had a civil suit against me, wrongful death. And what happened, though, is a couple years passed by. And I realized, you know, there was a deposition. And so I'd only met the family in passing. And I realized they'd never heard from me directly other than the deposition, the sorrow I felt. And I went to her father. And it was very interesting because her father had been in prison for fraud in his business. And in that experience, I'll tell you what he found. When I came to him to share a song that I wrote called Allison, and that was her name, he said, he had listened to it, and he said, "Hey, Bill, you know, we're a musical family, and everybody here could appreciate what you've done there." He said, "But I want to tell you that you've already been forgiven."
Yeah.
And here I'm thinking, come on, this is something that was unforgivable. I'll carry the sorrow my whole life.
Right.
But here's a man telling me, "You've already been forgiven." And it's like, how could that be?
Right.
The next thing he said, James, was, "Now it's time to forgive yourself." So when he said that to me, I suddenly had my guilt lifted. I was saying, how could he possibly be that loving and forgiving? It's the love of a father. It's the love of the Father. It's the love of Christ. I mean, literally, if you think about that, I've already forgiven you.
Yeah.
Who is that talking? Right. Now it's time. And that's the second part of anyone healing and trying to get past anything they've done, wrongs they've done in their life, or even how they can get over a healing from wrong done to them. You know, now it's time to forgive yourself. It was the punch that was the punchline.
I do have a question about that. So when you heard you're already forgiven, was it difficult for you to forgive yourself? Because sometimes that can really tear somebody up. You know what I'm saying?
Most definitely.
Forgive yourself for something you thought, you know, yeah.
I was suicidal.
Okay.
At one point, I heard a radio report, a traffic report, that somebody had driven into a bridge abutment. And I didn't even know what the word was. What's a bridge abutment? But I pretty much pieced it together with I drove around a lot because I would go out and see, you know, studios that were being built, or, you know, I had a lot of travel in my life. And so, yeah, I figured it out pretty quickly with the next time I was doing an underpass over a bridge in the highway. And my mind went there, you know, as a way out. And that was another remarkable time, because during that period, I came home one evening, kicked my shoes off and put it on. You know, we have a stairway right by the stairway up to the bedrooms by the door, and I put my shoes there. And later I went to get my shoes, and my young, just past toddler son, there were his little sneakers stuck inside my shoes. And I just looked at that and I went, I don't know how that happened. Mm. You know, did he think to do that? But it was a sign, you know, it was a sign that I got to be here for him.
Yeah.
And it was a sign that, you know, he'll fill my shoes. And so,
I guess I
would. Yeah, there again, music brought me through this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Music was healing, and music can be cathartic.
Totally.
And you know, I guess part of what I'm doing is encouraging, compelling people, if they have anything in their lives to work through. I also have a pretty fun song. On the other hand, I have some other amusing songs, but one of them, it's kind of fun because it delves into the, it's called The Requiem for the Miserable Artist. And so it's about that tortured artist syndrome that we get into, you know, why aren't I appreciated? And what do I have to do to, you know, all that kind of thing. And a lot of it's about giving that up.
Right.
So,
okay. So here's a question I just thought of. Just, have you ever, when you're going through the whole writing aspect of this musical, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much did you think about how much this is helping other people, you know, bringing back their good memories and fun memories? And, you know, because I know, like you talked about suicide and music brought you back, you know. Do you ever wonder how much this is helping other people, like, you know, not commit suicide on you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I hear. Yeah. What's interesting is that I didn't start out with that intention.
Okay.
I think that was revealed to me over time. And again, that's what I hope my art ends up being, a greater conduit to the creator. The reason why I can be creative is because the creator is, I can plug into the higher power. You know, it's interesting. I just met a guy who's in the electrical business, and we got on this discussion. I said, it's kind of like, you know, the Lord is a higher power that we can't begin to handle.
Right.
In other words, we need a pretty big step down transformer. Just otherwise, it would blow out every appliance in our house and blow our minds. And so there's so much. I think if artists were to take a look at that flow they get into, to take a look at being inspired. Well, what is that? That's in spirit. And so you can't help but, you know, you've heard people say, man, that song just wrote itself.
Yeah.
Or you hear artists say,
like 10 minutes, right. You know?
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny because some of those are the ones that they were least expecting anything from those songs.
I hear that. Yeah. I hear that all the time on this podcast for sure.
Yeah. It's almost like they get themselves out of the way. And I think that's what the Lord wants. Get your freaking ego out of the way.
Right. Just let it write itself, you know.
Get your posturing out of the way. Get the facade. You know what I mean? And obviously, we're in show business, and obviously, we're in a business of individuals that have to put themselves forward. But I think audiences respond to the most real they witness. You know what I mean? That if you don't have that. On the other hand, there's such a celebrity culture fascination now that it's kind of sad because regular people are taking on that celebrity nonsense.
Right.
But bottom line, I think for artistry's sake, I think you have to, the other side of that, not having that false front, is to also, what was it Pete Townsend called it? The eminence front.
Okay.
It's an eminent front. It's a put on, was his words. At any rate, you also have to, you know, that we put up those same things to protect ourselves.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's posturing and protection that we really have to come to terms with to be free. And, you know, that's part of, so when you ask me, you know, did I have it in mind to help people out? I will encourage any writer out there to use their personal reservoir, but also to look at how you can reach a niche of audience. How can you define someone that this a song will resonate with? Sometimes that can be, like I said, sometimes it can be premeditated. You can have it, you know, design up from that perhaps. But other times it just has to come out of what you're doing. And I use the term of why should the audience care? You know, and if I keep that in mind, then it's a matter if they're going to care about if they see caring, if they see that if you touched something about them. I would encourage, you know, there's so many different, you know, that's what creativity is. There's so many different paths to getting something that is resonating.
So I have some fun, three more questions for you. I hope they're fun for you.
Okay.
Since we talked about them, I want to ask you this. So I do a usual this band or that band, okay? Now we mentioned the Beatles, so I'm going to toss that in there. So who do you like to listen to more? Is it the Rolling Stones or the Beatles?
The
Beatles. And I'll tell you which, that's a common thing I get here is the Beatles, you know?
Yeah, I
think they're so iconic that you can't deny not liking them, at least one song, you know? I mean, the Rolling Stones have some good songs, but they don't speak to me the way that, you know,
they're a rootsy blues band that really, they were hugely influenced and loved the Chicago blues scene. And I spent time in Chicago, so I know how gutsy and real that is. And so I go, okay, that's fine. The Beatles did influence the Stones to do some things that, was it producer they had, Oldham? I'm spacing. But at any rate, but they stuck to, I mean, at some point, sorry, Stones fans. At some point, it's the same song.
Right,
again,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, look at them.
Good songs, though. You know, I mean, I love the Rolling Stones, but the Beatles just speak to my soul more, you know.
Yeah, again, I think it's the level of variety, adventure, and you heard John and you heard Paul in terms of influence, and then eventually you heard George as well,
right?
Terms of, you know, you still had the Beatle group chemistry going, but at times those different individual influences they weren't even standing out in the mix. It just gave it a new flavor.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I think, yeah. Beach Boys, though.
Beach Boys, yes.
Great, too. Yeah. And they even, you know, the Beatles took lessons from them when Brian Wilson did Pet Sounds, for instance, and he started going in adventurous ways. But, man, the Beach Boys vocals were nuts.
Well, that fall. Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because my next question is, I always ask this to the Mount Rushmore of artists. You have four guys on the Mount Rushmore. Who are your four top favorite bands?
Oh, individual artists from bands, or would you say, or
groups, artists? Because I know that after you hang over with me, you're like, damn it, I should have said this guy, that guy, you know. This
person, I know.
Because it's always changing for me. You know? Yeah.
Well, I mentioned one, Pat Metheny.
Okay.
In terms of artistry, he's right up there. And some of these are going to be eclectic in nature. Todd Rundgren. I think Todd was a big influence. Of course, he produced many things from Badfinger on through to Meatloaf, you know, who had a multi-platinum career, to any number of things. But he had a certain, again, vocal harmonization was very, very good. There's even people nowadays that I think could become. I'm listening to a guy named Lewis Cole, and he recently went from electronic into orchestral.
Okay.
And I admire him. And so I don't know that I could put him up there with the Mount Rushmore
yet.
I'm trying to basically state that keep looking for those kind of people
that
have that level of potential, because they're starting to show signs of great things. I don't think we can live in the past, and that's one of the things I want to impart about today. There's two different things. One, familiarity has a positive, which many of the marketers in the industry and the programmers and the format people all want to have a relative sonic offer. In other words, one song to the next song, they want to have familiarity that people are comfortable in that genre or stylistic zone.
Right.
That kind of comes from demographic studies. It kind of comes from formula-driven consumerism. I said that kind of harshly, didn't I? Well, the point being is that familiarity can breed contempt. But here's a human trait. Once you get familiar with something, you start to not see it anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And what happens is you lose your sense of awe. And so I think artists need to try to get back to, how can I create something awesome? It's not like awesome dude, awesome. It's like, how can I create a sense of wonder about what I'm doing? I'm not saying that that's lost. I'm just saying that it could be greater, expanded, and muscles flexed towards it by not listening to the, well, who do you sound like? Or trying to be like, trying to fit some radio format. Radio is dead, in my terms. You know, it's
just like the song says, "Video killed a radio star." You know, from way back when. You know,
were talking about, you know, the image, killed the music integrity.
Yeah. Right.
And so, again, I don't want to rant on that, other than to say I think I want to encourage artistry and encourage new. You know, I'll go back to, obviously, I've already hinted at enough here that, you know, having the faith of how do I put it in a way that, it's the living Lord. You know what I mean? It's the life force power, whatever you want to relate to it as. You know, you have to look at the new creation and the new covenant. You know, they were both about being new, and new means to seek and recognize new,
right,
and then create it.
Yeah.
So the journey to new, to me, is to know God. You know, not to know God as ideas and information, but to know him as a state of being, you know, and to know some depth of the grace, you know, through creating. You know, it's a grace-given environment. You just literally, you're vibrating in a divine dimension when you get to that point. Even the words. Even what I'm saying right now, can't have God by talking
right.
about him.
Right.
You know, you have to experience. And he's the one who's, he's the master painter. He has created the whole scenery that we see around us. So that's my preachiness. But I only say that because, you know, what was the name? Penn and Teller. Who was the one that talked?
That was Penn.
Yeah. He Penn said something really cool. He says he thinks a Christ-centered life is pretty wild. He wasn't a believer. But he said, man, if you believe it, why wouldn't you be like bubbling over?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want other people to know that freedom?
Right.
So forgive me. Sometimes I just have to go there. I mean, that's what he wants me to do. And that's part of what was reinforced in my whole venture with this. So of course I want that for anyone, and I want their artistry to be a place where they know that there's more to it than just themselves.
Right. Yeah. Two more artists that you like.
Oh wow.
Yeah, you gave us two.
Yeah, we didn't get Mount Rushmore completed.
It's fine. Yeah. Yeah, you're all good.
Did we? Oh, my goodness. I liked Joe Jackson.
Okay.
Again, I often have these semi-eclectic characters.
Right.
If I was going to have them at a party, that I mean, it would be like a Joe Jackson and Todd Rundgren and Pat. And I think they might even all get along.
Yeah. One more.
One more.
One more of your favorite artist of all time. Like I said, it's going to change like within the next 5 minutes, you know?
Of all time? Okay, since you said all time, I'd have to say Maurice Ravel.
Okay.
I'll go back to... Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so we got one more question for you, and we do honestly thank you for coming on the show. This might be the hardest question yet that I've asked so far, okay? Is there one artist, song, or album that you can listen to by yourself, but you can't tell me, your wife, or anybody else how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
I can't tell anyone else
It's so powerful to you that you can't explain how it makes you feel.
I'd say it's Still Life Talking, Pat Metheny Group. There again, they don't use words, so it's automatically beyond words.
Right, exactly.
But it's also it's symphonic in nature. It's a band of five, but they literally end up sounding like, you know, interweaving parts of a symphony.
Isn't music so great? Well, music is so great because, I mean, it brings like double emotion. You know, you don't know what you're gonna do when you listen to a song. You know, whether you cry, jump for joy, sit there and just think about your past. You know, look ahead of the future. Music does wonderful things to everybody. You know, at different times of their life. You know,
I think that's why we
like
love
the musical.
We love it because we can't, it's indescribable.
Yes, exactly.
What happens to us emotionally, yes, you can start to qualify it by various emotional, sad, happy, whatever, but it's really beyond that too. So I got to study acoustics quite a bit by going into engineering. And, you know, you get into wave theory and you come to understand physics at larger sense for that. And so literally we're all vibrating beings. We are living in a vibrating universe. You know, all the solid objects around us are vibrating. We now know. And what's interesting is sound is, of course, a wavefront, a vibration. Frequency is nothing but shifting vibration. Right. And so it's interesting. I was talking to a guy who's not in music, but he was explaining the music experience. And he said, it just gets deep down in us. You know what I mean? That literally every, and it's called in physics, it's called sympathetic vibration.
Right.
You know, and that is where, you know, by one initial sound being struck, that things around it will vibrate. Even this room, as I speak, is
Yeah.
vibrating with
Vibrate,
my
yeah.
voice.
Right.
And so that happens to us, and it happens on a very deep level, you know? And
Yeah.
that's where the indescribable part comes from. And
Right.
I think it's soul deep. That thing that people sense, call it your instinct, call it your intuitive nature, call it your ESP, call it,
Call it
you know,
whatever you want.
call
Right.
it your soul, you
Right.
know,
Yeah. Yeah.
and it music gets to that. And sometimes I think the closest thing that gets there at times is poetry.
Yeah.
And
Right.
or even if you watch some dance, you know, you watch some dance troupes and you suddenly, you know, you're captivated by the human performance. So yeah, we are blessed to be of this species that, you know, has come up with this stuff over millennia.
Right, yeah. Well, if you really think about it, everything is music. You know, you got the birds
Oh.
chirping, the breeze blowing your hair. You know, it's everything is, you know.
I appreciate you saying that because I think if more artists were to realize that the soundscape around them is all part of their role in the universe, you know what I mean? And yes, it can mean imitating sometimes those types of things. I think in the modern world and mechanism of the modern world, we get pretty wrapped up in our own man-generated sounds. But yeah, I think it's a matter of stepping back in order to see that. And
There's a great quote that I think you know of. It's like, music is everywhere you look for it or you feel it. Because it is, you know? And I think that's like the greatest quote ever, you know? Besides when words fail, music speaks.
Yeah, we did hit that subject finally, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're doing in terms of raising consciousness and hearing artist viewpoints and getting an elevating an appreciation of music. And it kind of comes back to what you were saying about modern music. I like I say, I think there's music being produced as good as ever. Yet, music has been commoditized because it's everywhere. So people don't have an appreciation for it because it's just there. Does that make sense? It's at the music, it's at the grocery store, it's in their car, it's everywhere. And so sometimes they don't bring themselves to a focus point. And I think I think we're going to see some things in terms of that multitasking, attention deficit that's sneaking into our lives by I called it the barrage of info coming at us. I think that we're going to be consciously making efforts, you know, and it may have to happen in maturity. In other words, once you get past the, you know, devil may care period of time where, you know, you just let things happen to you more than you're creating things. But at any rate, yeah, that's what I hope. So to have a greater appreciation for music.
And I do want to say something before I let you go. I'm so glad and respect of music totally because you said that music found you when you were in your darkest times, you know, and music saved you, you know. And I just want to appreciate you finding music for you to save your life because if it wasn't for that, we would never be talking. I would have never met you, you know. And I think that's really special and powerful that you're still here.
Well, thank you. I think that I want more people to look at their lives in that respect.
Yes.
You know, that they are one of a kind. I have a song called One of a Kindness.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's somewhat about what's going on in our society in terms of polarization. And everybody's kind of ready to jump, you know, at the chance of let's debate. Okay, now let's just rip each other apart.
Yeah, we have a,
The opening line of that is, the opening line of that is, my friend hatred thinks the cure to shouting is louder shouting.
That's
and it goes on. I actually use friendships and states of being as friends, and who are we going to make our friends and that sort of thing. So, in a world that has enough of that, again, I think we have an opportunity to kind of break ourselves free of that knee-jerk reacting to the world. And that's why I call it one of a kindness. Look at everybody as one of a kind. Look at people. Don't think of people within like a category, because once you do that, then it takes away your chance to get to know the individual.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so once you get to know the individual, then you understand, well, everybody deserves kindness. Everybody deserves respect. Everybody deserves honoring who they are and listening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can happen at the checkout counter. It can happen behind the wheel where we started that conversation.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah.
So,
So, all right. So, everybody listening, you can find Bill Mullen's podcast, As I Recall Forever. It's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and everywhere you get podcasts from.
Yeah.
Also, if you would like a physical copy of all his music on vinyl, or I think it's on CD, right?
It's on vinyl and digital download, UHD. Yeah. So the stuff was recorded 96K, 24, well, it was actually recorded in 32-bit, but we mastered it down to 24-bit. So if anybody's audiophile level, they might like the vinyl, and the vinyl, by the way, I had Bernie Grundman, who was probably... he's the master of mastering, and silky nice. I'm humbled by what I ended up with. So,
To buy that physical merchandise, you could go to thenexthumanity1.bandcamp.com or thenexthumanity.com, and with the bundle comes a vision book.
I think you'll find that really interesting from a stand. It's not just lyrics and it's not just kind of liner notes. It's me interjecting a lot of inspirational, relative quotes from others and other, sometimes truisms around some of the music. So. Yeah, a list of all the people who have influenced me.
Yeah.
So you can read to your heart's delight.
There you go. So we do honestly love you, and thank you for coming on, and we welcome
you. I love you too, James. In a very short time, you know, it's easy to have an affinity towards what you're doing, and I'm privileged to be here.
Oh, thank you so much, sir. We honestly love you here.
Well, let's thank you.
Come back
you.
Anytime, you know.
Let's stay in touch. And again, if anybody wants to be in touch with me in terms of talking about how can I give context to what I'm doing, you'll see it. The label name, SIG Music. You'll see a number of folks that I've worked with.
Yeah.
And try to get some differentiation, but distinction. And I'm open to talking to anybody.
Cool. All right, cool. And with that said, everybody, thank you for listening. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.
Bye for now.